When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
I'm John Batchelor with the very generous Professor Emily Wilson at the University of Pennsylvania. Her new work is The Iliad by Homer. And we've been approaching this scene for some moments now. Patroclus, the boon companion of Achilles, son of Peleus. And at some point, the conviction is brought to Achilles's son of Peleus' camp that he must enter the battle because the Greeks are losing. And the Greeks have built a rampart and a moat, and Hector, the great fighter of Troy, penetrates the wall, and they're trying to burn the ships. And if the ships are destroyed, the understanding is the Greeks can't go home again. They will be defeated. So Achilles is persuaded that while he will not enter the battlefield, Patroclus has had planted in his mind earlier in the drama that he can wear Achilles' armor and fool people. They'll think he is Achilles, Professor. Is that the idea?
Yes, at least initially the Trojans will think Achilles has come back to battle, and the concept is that that will frighten them enough that they'll be routed and start turning back towards Troy, and at least the fleet won't be burnt, and there might still be a chance for the Greeks to have a Nostos, a homecoming.
Achilles warns him. What does he tell him?
He says, drive Hector from the ships, but then turn around. Don't push on right to the city, because that's not a good idea for you to do that by yourself without me. Turn around, come back to our hut. Don't keep pushing on, driving Hector back to Troy. But of course, Patroclus has so much in common with Achilles, including the desire for honor and the enormous skill in massacre that every great Homeric hero has. And he doesn't want to turn around. When it's time to turn, he doesn't.
Yes, the artistry of having Achilles speak like that, warning him. You knew exactly what you just had, the foreshadowing of the end.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
We've known the whole time Patroclus is going to die. We know Achilles is going to die. And yet again, it's one of those scenes that you want there to be a different ending.
You do. And I think it shows the enormous artistry of the poem that, I mean, even I've read this poem, that book, so many times. And yet every time I'm like, surely this time he's going to make it. And we have all these devices, like the narrator speaks directly to Patroclus saying, then Patroclus, this is what happened. And I think those moments where there's this sort of breaking of the wall, where you're so deeply emotionally invested in this story, and you think maybe this time it can go differently. Maybe this time he will turn around, and maybe he'll die some other day, not right now. And then he's, of course, you know, the story turns out the way it always does.
Apollo intervenes. Is that the cause of Patroclus falling to Hector because of the intervention?
As with so many of these divine interventions, there's so much ambiguity because there's a double causation, right? It's both the fact that Apollo unclips his helmet and he's sort of stripped of this quasi-magical armor. In some of the legends that the Iliad itself doesn't tell us explicitly, this armor was magical. When Patroclus was wearing it, he couldn't die. But the narrative seems to imply when he's wearing the armor of Achilles, it would be perhaps impossible for him to be killed. But Apollo reaches in and strips him, and then he can be killed.
Now, there's some moments here that are just high Hollywood drama. The horses, the immortal horses weeping.
Yes.
And Achilles being told that Patroclus is dead. His sobbing, his weeping. His mother comes to him. You know that Achilles is going to strap on his guns and go out there and shoot down the whole town. You know it's coming. It's the cowboy payoff. But first, his wife, his mother, Thetis, is going to take care of him. And she goes to a character I don't know if I ever knew about him, because he's so vivid. Hephaestus, is that how you say it?
Hephaestus?
Hephaestus, yes.
Hephaestus, yes. Yes, he's a wonderful divine character. I mean, you talked about your favorite gods, but I think Hephaestus should be on your list of favorite gods in the Iliad. He's the one who intervenes in his parents' abusive marriage, and he's also the tech god. He's the one who creates all the amazing metalwork armor, all the weapons, and he's the god of fire and volcanoes. So, of course, he's good with blacksmith work. So Thetis goes to the faraway workshop of Hephaestus and asks him to make magical armor to replace the armor that Hector has stripped from Patroclus. So Hector doesn't manage to drag away the body of Patroclus, but he strips his armor. We talked before about the importance of triumphing over your enemy by taking his armor from him. So that means Achilles can't go back to battle until he has a replacement set of armor. So he gets this armor built by this divine armor with an amazing shield, which represents, it seems like it represents the whole world. So he's coming back to battle with this sense of, this is what the whole world is about, this moment of Achilles rejoining the battlefield.
What I liked about Hephaestus is that he's got bent legs. So we're to understand in some fashion, though he's the son of Zeus, he's disabled. But he's worked around it. You use the word robot in explaining it. It's quite wonderful to consider. I thought of him as in the James Bond dramas. There was a Q who would always show James Bond some version of a car that he has to take to the battlefield. All right, Achilles now puts on the armor. And he is now going to enter the field. Before the armor's ready, he goes out and shows himself, and they're so frightened they run away.
Yes, even his voice seems to scare them. So he barely needs the weapons, and yet he has all the weapons.
But Achilles is a killing machine.
He's terrifying. And we've had many massacre sequences at this point in the poem. By the time Achilles finally comes back to battle, we've had so many sequences of amazing slaughter. And yet it's called in Greek an aristeia, the moment when a warrior shows that he's the best warrior on the battlefield by creatively, virtuosically slaughtering one man after another. When Achilles comes back, it's still extraordinary. He goes far beyond what any other warrior has done, both in terms of violating human norms, like killing people who are unarmed, who are begging for mercy, killing people who are suppliants, and also by clogging up the river. And the river, of course, in the world of Homer, is a god. The river rises up and says, stop clogging me up with corpses. I'm trying to run with clear water, and you've clogged up my waters with blood, with corpses. And yet even then, Achilles doesn't want to stop.
Achilles, son of Peleus, is searching the battlefield for Hector to avenge Patroclus. And Apollo protects Hector somewhat. What is he? That's the mist that he put. No, it's not a mist. How does he protect him? I don't remember.
He creates a false image of another Trojan whom Achilles starts pursuing and thinks he's pursuing the final Trojan, but in fact he's pursuing the god. And then all the Trojans have time to flee into the city walls, except for Hector, who refuses to get to lock himself up inside the city. And so he remains outside the city walls to confront Achilles alone. So then they're the only ones left outside the city walls is Achilles wearing the divine armor and Hector, who doesn't have divine armor and who thinks he might have protection from the gods, but maybe not.
No, I know we're not giving away the plot. The plot is extremely well known for 2,700 years. Everybody's going to die. And I want to just because we're coming to the final drama, you know, in the video game, this is when you consult the biggest boss of all at the end. Okay. What, at this point, do they understand is death? What is death to a warrior? Where does he go? What happens to him?
So in the first lines of the Iliad, we're told that what happens when many, many warriors die is that their psuche, a psuche is a spirit or soul or something that's of a different substance from physical body. The psuche goes to Hades, and then the body is still there. So there's in later Greek understanding, there was an idea that the psuche is the self. But in Homer, it doesn't seem to be quite the self. It's something a little less than what you are in your whole physical person. So the body also matters and has to be taken care of. So Hector, when he finally confronts Achilles on the battlefield and knows he's going to die, begs Achilles saying, please take my body back to my parents. Let me be buried in my city. And even if you're going to kill me, don't let me have that ultimate dishonor of not having my body buried at home.
There's a scene in which Patroclus, the dead Patroclus, comes to Achilles as a spirit. You use that.
Yes.
It is a spirit wandering the earth. When does the spirit retire? Is the spirit always going to be available to come to Achilles, or the spirit of Hector? Can he come to a scene we don't have? Can he come to Andromache? Is that something they believed?
That sequence where the spirit of the dead Patroclus comes to Achilles when he's been staying up late drinking and crying and missing his friend, it seems to suggest that without the proper funeral rites, the spirit, the psuche, can't cross over the Styx and can't get into the, at least in later mythology, there's an idea of the Elysian fields, the better part of the realm of Hades, where dead warriors who have glory can stay forever performing their sports and things they like doing in life. So Patroclus's spirit is wandering because he hasn't had a funeral and he hasn't had the proper rites of mourning.
The battle between Achilles and Hector doesn't last very long, and Achilles wins. Now, at this point, the correct thing to do was to allow the Trojans to come out and reclaim the body. Andromache sees that her husband has been killed. She has her child. She knows that she's going to be enslaved. The child will die. All of this is implicit in the language, and yet we still have horror ahead of us because Achilles is not enough to best Hector. He wants to turn him into something for the dogs and the birds? Is that what he wants to do?
Yes, there's the threat of making your human enemy into dog food or bird food, dehumanizing completely. And he also wants to keep punishing him forever. I mean, there's an idea of the vengeance is not enough, just killing isn't enough. He wants to, in a way, keep on torturing him and humiliating him in the eyes of his family and the people who loved him forever. He also, he ties him by his ankles behind his chariot and drags him in front of the city so his people can see how humiliated he is. He's naked, he's covered in dust and blood and gore. And then he drags him round and round and round the tomb of the dead Patroclus. And it seems as if he could do that forever. He refuses to eat, he refuses to stop doing it.
The book is Iliad, Homer, and the translation is Professor Emily Wilson of the University of Pennsylvania, read by Audra McDonald. When we come back, what is called in a novel acceptance. There's a revelation. But in this novel, it opens up the possibility that what we've been witnessing right now is a way of redeeming and at the same time coming to terms with loss. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.